Good work habits go hand in hand with success in every area of endeavor. There is nothing that will bring you to the attention of your superiors faster than developing a reputation for being a good, dependable worker. How you work determines the quality and quantity of your rewards. How you work determines how much you earn, how effective you are, how much you are respected in your organization, and how much real satisfaction you get out of your job. Unfortunately, most people are poor workers. They are unorganized, unfocused, and easily distracted. They work at about 40% of capacity. Sadly enough, they don't even seem to know how to do it any differently. Much of the blame for poor work habits goes back to the school system, to the attitudes of teachers toward academic excellence, and the attitudes of parents toward homework. If people go through 10 or 12 or even 15 years of schooling and never have to learn how to settle down and produce good quality work, it's not surprising that they will have a hard time producing high-quality work when they enter the workforce. In this session, we will talk about how to develop the habits of highly productive people. The foundations of good work habits can be summarized in two words. They are focus and concentration. Focus and concentration. Focus means clarity concerning the desired results and the relative priority of each step toward the results. When I think of focus, I think of a photographer adjusting his or her lens to keep the subject in sharp focus. In order to be truly effective at work, you have to be continually adjusting your lens to be sure that what you're working on is the most important thing you could be doing toward achieving your most important goals. The very worst waste of time is doing something very well that need not be done at all. Concentration, on the other hand, means the ability to stay with the task until it is 100% complete. Concentration means to work in a straight line from where you are to where you want to go, without diversion or distraction, without getting sidetracked into doing things of lesser importance. There is a story of a traveler in ancient Greece who met an old man on the road and asked him how he could get to Mount Olympus. The old man, who turned out to be Socrates, replied by saying, "Just make sure that every step you take is headed in that direction." If you want to accomplish your goals, then just make sure that everything you do is taking you in that direction. Here are the big four steps to high productivity, and they cannot be repeated too often. First, set clear goals and objectives in writing. Think them through carefully before you begin. What are you trying to do? How are you trying to do it? Whenever you experience frustration of any kind, go back to these questions. What are you trying to do? How are you trying to do it? The second step to high productivity is a detailed plan of action for achieving the goal. This answers the question, how are you trying to do it? When you have done this, you will have the answers to what and how, something that very few people ever take the time to think through. The third step to high productivity is clear priorities with activities organized in a hierarchy of value and importance to the desired result, with the 80-20 rule applied over and over again, day by day, hour by hour, before you embark on any task or activity. And finally, the fourth step, single-minded concentration on the highest payoff tasks leading to the goal. This is the key to getting things done. There are real benefits from learning how to concentrate. For one, important task completion is a source of energy, enthusiasm, and self-esteem. Incompletion, or only partial completion of major tasks, is not only a major source of stress, but it also has no motivational power. When you complete a task that's important to you, you feel a burst of energy and well-being. But when you work on something that is unimportant, even if you complete it in a timely fashion, you get no feeling of satisfaction at all. Another benefit of concentrating on the job until it is finished is that task completion gives you confidence, competence, and a feeling of mastery. It gives you a feeling of self-control, that you are in charge of your own destiny. The habit of completing your transactions, of finishing what you start, is an essential part of character building. You cannot imagine a fully mature human being who is unable to finish what he or she begins. You can accelerate the process of becoming a highly productive person by visualizing yourself over and over as focused and channeled toward high achievement. See yourself as a highly productive, effective person. One powerful method you can use is to think of an incident in your past when, for whatever reason, you concentrated very hard on the completion of something that was really important to you. Now, take that memory and replay it over and over again as you think of yourself today. The subconscious mind functions in such a way that it records each replaying of an emotionalized experience as though it were happening again. If you replay your memory of successful task completion repeatedly on the screen of your mind, you will program your subconscious. You will then find that it gets easier and easier for you to stick with the job once you start. Another way you can accelerate the process of becoming a highly productive person is to assume the body language of high performance. There is a body position or physiology for almost every mental or emotional state. There's also a physiology for good work habits. If you work at a desk and you sit up straight, erect, and lean forward, you actually trigger a feeling of being more productive. If you walk briskly with your head up, with your shoulders back, and with your chin held high, you tend to feel like a more confident and productive person. On the other hand, if you slouch in a chair, or if you walk slowly with your head down, or if you put your feet up, you will actually feel a lack of self-confidence and lack of enthusiasm for productive work. A good exercise is to stop every so often and observe how you are sitting and doing your work. Ask yourself, would a highly effective person work like this? And if the answer is no, then change your posture and your position so that it is more consistent with the way you think a highly effective person would sit and work. Some years ago, the Reader's Digest reported on a study of genius. The study examined the life and habits of many geniuses in an attempt to determine what the common characteristics of genius were. The writers finally concluded that geniuses have three things in common. First is that all geniuses seem to take a systematic and orderly approach to problem solving. The second habit is that geniuses seem to have a sense of wonder, the ability to look at things in a fresh, almost childlike way. They keep an open mind and a flexible attitude on all subjects. The third quality of genius is that geniuses seem to have the ability to concentrate with greater depth and intensity than the average person. Someone once said that genius is simply an infinite capacity for taking pains. In fact, my experience has led me to conclude that anyone who can discipline himself or herself to concentrate single-mindedly on a single subject until he or she masters that subject will begin to perform at exceptional levels in that subject area. This applies to sales, management, parenting, negotiating, or anything else. High performance seems to be a matter more of perspiration than of inspiration. Here are six keys to developing the quality of concentration common to all geniuses. Number one, before you start to work, clear your workspace of everything except exactly what you need to complete the highest priority task on hand. Simplicity and order tend to be more conducive to highly productive work, for normal people as well as for geniuses. Number two, plan your days and organize your work so that you create blocks of time, chunks of time. Find ways to rob time from other activities and consolidate this time into blocks of a minimum of 60 to 90 minutes each. It is simply not possible for most people to accomplish meaningful tasks in less than 60 to 90 minute periods. By meaningful tasks, I am referring to creative work such as reports and proposals, as well as discussions with and about people concerning their work, their lives, and the future of the organization. You cannot rush important conversations, discussions, or negotiations. You need blocks of time. In order to concentrate, you must become creative in finding these blocks of time. And there are many ways to accomplish this. A very effective way is to work at home in the morning for an extended period of time. You tend to be fresher and more capable of concentrated effort in the morning than at almost any other time of day. Sometimes what I do is go to bed early and get up at 5 a.m. Then I can work uninterruptedly for as long as 3 or 4 hours before going to the office. I learned this method from reading the biographies and stories of many other effective people. They found that they could get an entire day's work done before the normal working day even began. Everything else they got done during the day was therefore a bonus. Big companies in large cities will often rent an apartment near the office and furnish it with desks, chairs, and office supplies so that executives can go there and work without interruption, away from the telephone and drop-in visitors. The very fact that you know that you will not be interrupted is conducive to better concentration and higher levels of productivity. There are three other time periods that you can use to your advantage to get great quantities of work accomplished. The first is to come into the office a full hour before the workday begins. Often you can clear up an entire day's work in that 1 hour. If you cannot do that, then working straight through your lunch hour from 12 to 1 is a great time management technique. Almost everyone goes out for lunch, and the level of activity and telephone calls drops off dramatically. Take your lunch hours before 12 noon or after 1 o'clock. You can get in and out faster, and you'll get better service. Number three, business people, salespeople, and entrepreneurs often find that working for an hour or two a day after everyone has left is the best way to stay on top of their jobs. The key is to take those 60 to 90 minute chunks of time without interruption, to close the door, to unplug the telephone, to put your head down, and just work flat out. You just have to accept that very little productive work is done in an office environment with all the distractions of people coming and going. Finally, remember with regard to these chunks of time that the last 20% of any conversation usually contains 80% of the value of that conversation, discussion, or negotiation. Often the last 20% of working time is the most productive because you are now totally into it. It often takes a long time to settle down and get to the heart of the matter. The third key for developing the quality of concentration is to remember that hard, sustained, concentrated effort is central to high productivity and successful achievement of anything worthwhile. Every great accomplishment in human history is preceded by an extended period of concentrated effort for a long, long time, sometimes for months, even years. When we think of Michelangelo, we think of the Sistine Chapel, and when we think of the Sistine Chapel, we think of the years of work that it took Michelangelo to paint it. When we think of any work of art or lasting accomplishment, we often respect it because of the incredible tenacity, perseverance, and concentration that was required to create it. The fourth key is to develop a compulsion to closure, an urge to completion. Create a reward system for yourself for the completion of a major task and refuse to give yourself the reward until the job is 100% complete. If you can find some way to involve someone else in the reward, like going out for dinner, taking a trip, buying a new car, or anything that involves and benefits two or more people, this will act as an added source of motivation. Many large sales organizations hold sales contests where their top producers are taken to an exotic resort in Hawaii or the Caribbean. They send the brochures describing the resorts to the spouses of the salespersons at their homes. This assures that the spouse at home will encourage the salesperson to qualify for the trip. It is very good psychology. Rewards are wonderful incentives to high performance. You should create as many of them for yourself as you can think of. The fifth key to learning to concentrate is a mental programming technique. John Malloy, in his book, How to Work the Competition into the Ground, talks about developing a trigger phrase to use when your attention wanders and you feel yourself getting distracted from your work. His recommendation, and I agree with it, is to just say, back to work. Whenever you find yourself getting distracted, just say emphatically, back to work, back to work, back to work. You will be surprised how easy it is for you to return to your work and start concentrating again. When someone else is talking to you or distracting you from your work, it is very easy to break away by simply saying, well, I guess I have to get back to work. This expression, back to work, used with yourself and with others, is a tremendous reinforcement of why you're at work in the first place. The sixth key to concentration is what Alec McKenzie in his book, The Time Trap, calls single handling. Single handling means that once you start a task of any kind, you resolve to stay with it until it is 100% complete. If you pick up a letter or begin a report or proposal or initiate a sales call or conversation, you discipline yourself to stay with it until it is finished. This simple technique can increase your productivity by as much as 50% the first day you start using it. I have been amazed over the years at how effective it is. Also with single handling, take advantage of what time and motion experts call the learning curve. What they found is that when you do a group of similar tasks together, the amount of time it takes you to do each subsequent task declines. If you have to do 10 or 20 of the same tasks, like replying to correspondence or adding up accounts, you can decrease the amount of time necessary for the completion of each one by as much as 80% by using the learning curve. You become more and more efficient with every task that you do as long as you do them one after the other. Now let's look at 9 more ideas that you can use to increase your productivity and increase the rate at which you get things done. Number 1, use concentration of power. This means that you concentrate your talents and abilities where they will yield the highest payoff to you. In our corporate strategy sessions, we focus on the idea of increasing return on equity. The purpose of strategy for a corporation is to allocate the company's resources in such a way that they yield the highest possible financial return on the equity invested. In setting personal strategy, we call it return on energy. Your job is to allocate your talents and abilities in such a way that you achieve the highest possible return on your energy invested. This comes from asking yourself, what talents, skills, and abilities do I have that account for my greatest successes to date? What is it that I have done that has gotten me this far? Almost invariably, there is a strategic key to any situation. There is a pressure point or a specific area where great breakthroughs are possible if it can be identified and exploited. You must always allocate your time with the determination to be continually increasing your personal return on your mental, physical, and emotional energy invested. Number two, concentrate on the few major areas where superior performance will bring outstanding results. Always apply the 80-20 rule to everything you do. Remember that it is often less than 5% of what you do that accounts for most of your results. So continue asking yourself, what can I and only I do that, if done well, will make a real difference? Number three, do things that you are better at. When you do things that you are better at, you have more fun, you make fewer mistakes, and you achieve greater personal productivity. So what are the few things that you do better than anyone else? What is it that you do that seems to be difficult for others? Focus on your unique talents and concentrate on the few things where you can achieve superior results. Number four, concentrate human strengths, your own and others, on major opportunities. Focus on the opportunities of tomorrow rather than the problems of yesterday. One of the rules for success in any organization is to concentrate the talents of your best people on your best opportunities. Many companies make the mistake of putting their best people to work to salvage the mistakes of yesterday rather than deploying them to maximize the opportunities of tomorrow. So ask yourself, what are my biggest opportunities for the future? Where can I make a real breakthrough if I concentrate? Number five, fish for whales, not minnows. Remember that if you catch 1,000 minnows, all you have is a bucket full of fish. But if you catch a single whale, you will pay for the whole voyage. In business, this is an important rule. Look at your marketplace and try to determine who the whales might be, and then make a plan to go after them. Sometimes landing one big customer or selling one whale of an order will be enough to make a business or an individual successful. Number six, identify your key result areas and work in them exclusively. Your key result area is the answer to the question, why am I on the payroll? Each person has one or two key result areas where they can make an important contribution to the organization. It is in concentrating your efforts on your key result areas that will enable you to achieve the most significant results in the shortest period of time. Number seven, set deadlines for important goals and stick to them. Deadlines act as a forcing system that causes you to work harder and more effectively as the deadline approaches. In fact, a goal or an assignment without a deadline is usually an exercise in futility. Promise other people that you will finish the job by the deadline. When you promise others, you motivate yourself to fulfill the promise. In this case, ego can be a wonderful thing. Number eight, allow enough time to do everything well. Take the time to complete the task in an excellent fashion. Highly productive workers always allow enough time to do the job right. And finally, number nine, don't hurry. Maintain an easy pace and work steadily. Remember the fable of the tortoise and the hare. Highly productive people work with a certain rhythm that enables them to flow through enormous amounts of work without becoming stressed or anxious. Remember, our great business in life is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand, right now. Peter Drucker says that a hallmark behavior of effective executives is that they do one thing at a time, the most important thing, and they stay with it until it is complete. In other words, they set priorities and they single handle. To conclude this session, remember that the ability to get things done, result orientation, is a key characteristic of all peak performers. You can develop this ability to concentrate single-mindedly through practice and repetition over and over until it becomes an ingrained habit of success to serve you for the rest of your life. Now we're going to talk about managing complex tasks. From time to time, everyone finds himself or herself responsible for a big project, what is called a multitask job. This type of job requires coordinating the efforts of several people, each of whom is responsible for part of the job, with every part of the job being necessary for successful completion. Your ability to handle these multitask jobs can be a critical factor in your success. Virtually all achievements of consequence are complex and involve the coordination of many people, up to and including things like the Moon Project, for instance, where tens of thousands of men and women contributed to putting a man on the moon. Even simple tasks like planning a party or producing a brochure or putting out a newsletter require the ability to plan multiple tasks. This type of planning and organizing is one of the core skills of time management. Your ability to put together and work with a team of people on a project is the critical skill for advancement in management. A study by Stanford University on the qualities that companies look for in promoting people into the chief executive officer position concluded that the ability to put together a team to accomplish a task was the most important single identifiable ability of an executive who was meant to be on the fast track. If you take a look at a person like Lee Iacocca, who turned around Chrysler Corporation, you'll find that one of the reasons he was hired was because of his ability to pull senior executives from a variety of different places to turn the company around. In his first 36 months at Chrysler, he replaced 35 out of 36 senior vice presidents, and that made all the difference. If you read Lee Iacocca's autobiography or if you listen to him speak, he'll always give the credit to the men and women that formed the teams that turned the company around. Your ability to put together teams to achieve multitask jobs or complex projects will, as much as any other factor, determine the course of your career. So let's talk now about project management. First, you begin by defining the ideal desired result or outcome of the project. What are you trying to accomplish, and how are you trying to accomplish it? The very best thing to do is to do this in conjunction with the team members if possible. What will the project look like if it is a complete success? Start from the successful completion, the ideal desired result, written down and clarified on a piece of paper, and work back to the beginning. How could you tell if you'd accomplished the project successfully? This is one of the most valuable of all mental and physical planning tools, is a clear description of the ideal finished project in advance, and then work back to the beginning and say, what are we going to have to do to get from where we are to the completion of this ideal desired result? The second step in project management is, whenever possible, bring together all the people whose contributions will be necessary for the success of the project. An important rule in project management is to assemble the team first. Remember, the people are not the only thing. People are everything. Assemble the team first. Bring together the people. Think carefully through who are going to be the team members. In our course on hiring and firing, we teach that 95% of success in management is selection. 95% of everything that you accomplish as a leader will be determined by your ability to select the team members. If you select poor team members, almost invariably you will not be able to achieve the goals that you want. Focus on the people before the task. Remember, the people are the most important thing. By focusing on the people, you can instill ownership by sharing the job with them. Remember, there's a one-to-one relationship between how much a person feels that he or she owns the job and is responsible for the whole, and how committed he or she is to making the project a success. One of the jobs of leadership, of effective management, is to instill ownership in each member of the team, so each member of the team feels personally responsible for the accomplishment of the overall project. You do this by developing what is called a shared vision. A shared vision is something that everyone buys into. How do you develop a shared vision? Well, you sit down with the members of your team and you say, what are we trying to accomplish? You get everybody to dream together, everybody to visualize and see together the ideal outcome or desired result. Once you can share the vision with everybody, then you move on to developing what are called shared plans. You have everyone sit down and discuss and develop the plans, the step-by-step activities that will be necessary to accomplish the project. The more involvement you have with the members of the team, the more involved the members of the team are in the early stages, the more committed and the more creative they will be in accomplishing the task in the later stages. Now, the next step is to set a deadline for final completion based on the consensus of your team. This is terribly important. Ask people how long they think it will take to complete each part of the task and to complete the task overall. Get a consensus. Get everyone to agree that it can and will be done within a certain time frame. One of the biggest mistakes that I've seen in project management is that the project leader sets a date or a deadline that is arbitrary, that the team members do not agree with. And in every single case, problems arise and the deadline is not met, or if the deadline is met, it's so full of mistakes and problems that it would have been much better to have a deadline upon which you had a consensus. So set a deadline based on a consensus of your team, a majority decision, if you like. Then, number four, list every task, function, and activity that must be completed, right down to the smallest little activity. The more you can break down the project into individual jobs, tasks, or activities, the easier it is for you to delegate, to supervise, to plan, organize, coordinate, and get the project finished on time. Step number 5 is to identify any additional information required in order to complete the project. List getting the information as a separate task and assign it or delegate it specifically to one of the team members with a deadline. The 6th step is to determine the limiting step. What part of the project determines the speed at which the project can be completed? What part of the task is the bottleneck that sets the speed for everything else? For instance, if we want to do a public seminar, the limiting step, the step that determines everything else, is finding and booking a hotel facility in a particular city. Getting the space for a seminar is almost invariably the most difficult bottleneck in the whole project. In every project that I've been involved in, there is always a bottleneck. There is always one thing, the achievement of which determines the schedule for everything else. So identify the limiting step and place that as a very high priority. In fact, place your most talented and your most capable people, even yourself, on that task. The 7th key is to organize the parts of the project in 2 ways. The first way is sequential, where each task requires that another be done first. You know, one of Murphy's laws is, before you do anything, you have to do something else first. Well, organize the task sequentially, where one job has to be done before a second can be done, before a third can be done, and so on. The second way to organize the task is parallel. Parallel is when more than one task can be done at the same time, when two or more people can be working on 2 or 3 different tasks that can go independently of each other. So those are the 2 ways that you organize a project: sequential, one after the other, and parallel, with 2 or more activities taking place at the same time. Number 8, I want you to imagine a simple project management form. This is a form that you can use. You can draw it up on a blank sheet of paper. You can use a lined piece of paper. It's very simple. What it consists of is a list down the left-hand side of the paper of every single task that has to be accomplished up to and including the completion of the project in order of completion. In other words, the first task is the first one, the second that follows from the first is the second, all the way down, so the last task in the list is the very last thing that will be done at the completion of the project. Across the top of the page, you write the time. Now, the time can be the days that it will take, the weeks that it will take, or the months that it will take. And you break the month with columns running up and down the page. For instance, you'll write one line for each week, or one line for each month, or one line for each day. And then you begin to structure and create a visual picture of the time period within which those will be done. Let us say that you are going to have a Christmas party at your home, and that the most important thing that you need to do in order to have this Christmas party is to book the caterer. That booking the caterer and getting the person who will serve the food, finalizing the menu, confirming the price, is the starting point, because you can't send out the invitations, you can't finalize the day, you can't do anything until you've done that. So let us say that you begin to plan this several months ahead, and you give yourself 2 weeks to find the caterer, to confirm that the caterer is available, and to agree and finalize on the menu and the price. So what you would do is you would draw a line from left to right that covered 2 one-week columns going up and down. Let's say the next thing is to send invitations. Once you've confirmed the caterer and the date and the time and the place, then you would have to get the invitations and send them out. And let's say you give yourself from week 2 to week 3 in order to get the invitations drawn up and mailed out. Then you have to order flowers, decorate the house, finalize all the arrangements, set up the tables and chairs, have the party, and clean up. Each one of these will be done with a line running from left to right that moves further along the time chart. The very last thing, cleanup, will be at the last lower right-hand corner of your chart. Using a chart like this, using a piece of paper to visually represent a project, will save you more time than you can imagine. It will also show you where all the bottlenecks may arise. Number 9 is to assign and delegate each task with a specific deadline. Remember, a task without a deadline is merely a discussion. Every task must have a specific deadline for completion, and aim for completion of each task in the project before the deadline. The more important the deadline is, the more of a fudge factor you should build into it. Try to finish it at least 10% early. If it's a project that takes 3 weeks and must be done by Friday 3 weeks from now, aim to have the entire project complete by Wednesday or even Tuesday, allowing for last-minute mistakes, unexpected setbacks, and so on, so that you build in that fudge factor that assures that the project is complete on time. It is amazing how many of the great events of history, the great battles, the great turning points in human life, have failed because a person did not build in that marginal requisite of fudge factor, that little bit of extra time that was necessary to assure that everything worked properly. Step number 10 in project management is what is called crisis anticipation. Ask, what can possibly go wrong? Remember Murphy's Laws, and there are several of Murphy's Laws, and they all apply to projects. The first of Murphy's Laws, which is most famous, is whatever can possibly go wrong will go wrong. But there's a second Murphy's Law that says, of all the things that can possibly go wrong, the one thing that will go wrong will be the worst possible thing at the worst possible time. The third of Murphy's Laws was that everything takes longer than is expected. The fourth of Murphy's Laws was that everything costs more than you budget for. So remember, the key to crisis anticipation is to think through in advance, what can possibly go wrong? What can possibly foul up? Where could we have a mistake that would threaten the successful completion of the project? And then make provision against it in advance. Always have what is called a plan B. The idea of a plan B is called the Bismarck factor, because Otto von Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany, was famous for always having a backup plan for any strategy that he initiated. No matter what he attempted to do, if it didn't work out, he immediately would reach into his drawer and pull out his well-developed, completely functioning alternative, his plan B, the Bismarck factor. Remember, one of the rules of life is this: you are only as free as your options. You're only as free as your alternatives. If you do not have options or alternatives developed, then in many cases you get trapped into a single course of action. And if something goes wrong with that course of action, you can be in serious trouble. Many great careers have been made because the executive in charge took the time to think through what might possibly go wrong, and then he made provisions against it. So when it did go wrong, he was ready with a second plan. Very important that you do that. It's the mark of the superior person. Here are the main problems in project management. The first, as we've talked about, is not allowing enough time. Not allowing enough time is probably the primary reason why projects fail and why people's careers get sidetracked. Number two is assuming that everything will go right. There's an old saying that errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Errant or incorrect or false assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Don't assume that everything will go right. Assume that you're going to have problems. A third difficulty in project management is to end up rushing at the end. When you rush at the end, you almost invariably get poor quality and make mistakes that you have to go back and correct, and it takes far more time than if you had just taken the time slowly and steadily to do it properly in the first place. And the fourth difficulty in project management is trying to do several things at once and doing them all poorly. Here's an idea for project management, and it's called storyboarding. It's one of the most interesting ideas, and we use it extensively within our organization. It was originally developed by the Walt Disney Corporation. What you do is you take a large cork board with pins or thumbtacks, and then you get a stack of 3x5 and or 5x8 index cards with a felt pen, and you begin to create what are called headers. So across the top of the board, you write the major parts of the project in one or two words. For instance, book caterer, send Christmas cards, arrange tables and chairs. You put those right across the top, and then under each of the headers, you put 3x5 index cards where you list each of the different steps. And what you do on this cork board is you create a visual representation of the entire project, showing who is going to do what, showing when it's going to be done, showing how each of the jobs correlate with each other. And then you can move the cards around and shift them back and forth. Sometimes across the top for headers, you will use the names of the individual people on the project team. And under them, you will write the different tasks that those people will be expected to do. And perhaps you write the tasks in black, and then you write the deadlines in green or red. Then you organize each person's tasks in order of priority, from the first thing they'll be expected to do to the last thing they'll be expected to do. Then you compare each person's various tasks and functions in this visual representation on the corkboard. Try it just once. Arrange the project visually, and it's amazing how much more creative you become, how much more clear the project becomes to everyone, and how much more likely it is that the project will be completed successfully, on time, and in a quality fashion. Now let's look at an example of a project that our company engaged in. In this case, it was a newsletter. And this is what we did following what we've talked about up to now. We listed all the tasks in sequential order and the order that they would have to be done in. These were some of the things that we came up with. First of all, we said determine the market and arrange for mailing lists for the newsletter. We immediately realized that arranging for lists was a separate multitask project, so we set it aside with a separate project management system for it, and then we went on. Then we said define the desired result, the ideal visualized desired result. In other words, if we are successful with this mailing of this newsletter, what will be the result? And we used that as our target, if you like, as our planning system, and everything that we did in the design of the newsletter was aimed to achieve that result. The third thing that we did is we designed the format and the layout. By this, I mean we determined the copy, we determined the photos, we determined how it was going to be laid out to achieve the desired result. After we designed the format and layout, the fourth thing we did was we wrote and assembled the copy and the photographs, all the material that would go into the design format to achieve the desired result. The fifth thing we did is we had it typeset and we had it laid out professionally so that it had the look and it had the appeal and it had the accuracy with the copy and photographs in the chosen format to achieve the desired result. And the sixth thing we did was we determined the printer, we got three different bids, and we had the newsletter printed. Now, I said before that we put the arranging for lists as a separate multitask project. In this multitask project, there were again four steps. The first step was to define the market population. Who were we going to send the newsletter to? One of the steps in this was to contact a list broker, was to go through our own mailing lists and the mailing lists of others that we work with, so we defined the market population. These are the people that are going to receive the newsletter. The second thing we had to do was to assemble and acquire all of the names so that we knew what the number was that we would be mailing to. The third step was to select a mailing house that would handle the stuffing, handle the labeling, and handle the mailing. Our final step was to print the list, to deliver it to a mailing house, to have the mailing house mail the newsletter, and to put it out. Now this sounds like a very simple project, deciding upon a newsletter, deciding upon the layout and design, deciding upon the mailing lists and the mailing house, getting it printed and getting it out. It took us almost 4 solid months and involved the activities of 4 or 5 different people and something like 200 or 300 hours. But the reason that we were able to do it successfully was because we worked it like a project, step by step, with each responsibility, each task, each function tying into each other. It is difficult to begin to use a systematic project management system, but it will save you more time and do as much or more to advance your career than almost any other skill that you can develop. And you can use it at home, you can use it in planning vacations, you can use it in building companies and organizations, starting your own business, becoming a successful salesperson, moving on to the fast track toward the executive suite, and many other ways. Now, the final thing in project management is to schedule regular review sessions to measure progress, solve problems, and to reassign responsibilities, to inspect what you expect. So the minute that you have decided upon the project team and the project and you have delegated different tasks and responsibilities, set up a regular schedule to meet and review and discuss how you're doing. Because no matter how good your plan at the beginning, it will require continual revision to make the project come out successfully. Now let's talk about the catalyst that makes project management successful, communications. The key to effectively managing a project team is good communications, and the 4 most important elements of good communications are, in order, 1, clarity. Clarity means to say exactly what you mean. Explain what you want done clearly and unambiguously. Never assume understanding. Never assume that the other people or the other person understands clearly what you've said or clearly what is expected of them. Ask the other person to feed it back in his or her own words. The most important part of discussion at the beginning of a project is it gives everybody a chance to ask questions, to articulate, and to internalize and synthesize the exact objective and the exact instructions of the project. The more opportunity people have for discussion, the more likely it is that it will be perfectly clear. But as a final check, have people feed back to you exactly what their idea of what it is they're expected to do is. The second key to good communications is consistency. The team leader must be patient, optimistic, determined, and persevering. the ability to be a good project leader requires all of the great qualities of leadership and management excellence. You must keep cool and remember that if you don't stay on top of it, it probably won't get done. Let me repeat that. If you don't stay on top of it personally, it probably won't get done. Don't assume that everything is going according to plan unless you've taken the time to inspect it and check it yourself. The third key to good communications as a team leader is that the team leader must deal with conflict and poor performance in a direct, straightforward manner. You cannot ignore poor performance. You cannot pretend it's not happening, and you cannot hope it will go away. So give regular feedback on performance and encourage feedback from the group. Encourage everybody to openly discuss the progress that you're making, and if necessary, reassign tasks. Give different jobs to different people. If one person is overloaded and another person is underloaded, be willing to reassign the tasks so that everybody feels that they can achieve their jobs in an excellent fashion. And finally, the fourth quality of good communications, the great quality of leadership, is courage. The courage to take the responsibility for results and to stay at it until the task is satisfactorily completed. Courage is rightly considered the foremost of the virtues, for upon it all others depend, as Churchill said. Remember, your ability to manage projects is vital to your realizing your full potential in life and in leadership.